Bina.
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 Okay, so we're back, and Kit Cummings is in the house.
Come on.
He just gave a talk just a couple hours ago now about it. And he was just blew me away, man. He was just so intense. Can you give me a backstory from sort of being boxed into sort of losing your compass and then how God grabbed you and brought you back?
Absolutely. Grew up unchurched. And first 25 years of my life, I was wild. You know, I mean, family loved me, but I was pagan.
Wow. And then, where was this?
Where? In Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Yep. Georgia boy.
I am. Bulldogs, baby. And
that's great.
At the age of 25, burnout. Mm. I was on the way to love my dad, lost my dad early to this disease. Addiction runs in my family, especially the males.
Okay.
And so I was an athlete, so that kind of got me through, went through at University of Georgia, but got into rock and roll. But on the other side, I was a promoter just for a couple of years. So, I mean, every move, I was getting deeper into drugs and alcohol. By the age of 25, I was just tired, which is sad at 25. And a guy showed up, changed my life. I didn't know the book, had never read the book, knew there was a God, didn't know him. And he studied with me, and I was an open book, sponge, couldn't study quick enough. 2 weeks, just because they wouldn't go any faster. Baptized Chattahoochee River, middle of the night, August 19th, 1989. It was the most sincere, authentic, you know, life-changing. Really, my friends were freaked out because I was not that guy.
Wow.
But I've only got one speed. And it's all out. I'm either going to try to save the world or tear some stuff up. I'm one or the other, right? And so I went into ministry. And pretty quick. Really, hindsight, too fast. But anyway, and over the next 15 years, it was a ride. I mean, it was bigger and bigger groups until I was in charge of a couple thousand people. And I was way out in front of my character. And it wasn't sustainable. And so after 15 years in the ministry, marriage, a couple of beautiful kids, I resigned, went into a storm. And went into my second burnout. 25, I burned out. Mm-hmm. Found my new life at 40. I was out of gas. And so, really, the box to me had become what was a beautiful relationship in the beginning, had become an ambitious career and then religion. And so, and it just, I exploded. Or maybe I imploded.
Yeah. So how long were you in that storm?
Luckily, it was about a year. It was a crazy year. But it was, everybody's got their story. Everybody's pain is their pain. And so I don't try to compare people's loss or pain because we all have it. But my bottom was 2004, and it was divorce, rehab, bankruptcy. Just boom.
Oh,
just the
man.
Bottom fell out. Yeah.
Wow.
And so got sober in 2005 and met my wife, my present wife, and we were married in 2006. And so, you know, I just celebrated 10 years since the last time I took a drink of alcohol, so that was awesome. And my kids, I've got a beautiful family. God gave it all back. But what I was lacking was my purpose and my passion. I thought, man, I've been a preacher and a good one. I love to preach. And I can tell. I mean, you know,
yeah,
I found this
awesome
gift.
Yeah.
And when I said a good one, I mean, it's what I do. I'll die if I don't do it. And I was in this place now where I was sober and married and everything was cool. And I'm working these corporate jobs that I hated. And I was in a new box.
What was the job? Tell me about the job.
Whatever was the flavor of the month. It was banking, real estate, insurance, whatever low barriers to entry were, you know, these commission jobs.
Yeah.
I was a hustler. And it was one, I'd do a job for a year, hate it, move on. So I did that for like 5 years. Just, it's honorable to do what you got to do to support your family. But I was dying because I was born to preach, and I couldn't preach anymore. I thought that I had lost my card, man, that God wouldn't have me anymore.
Wow.
And then I found the thing that changed my life forever. Now I, you know, the biggest problem I have now is trying to turn it off when I need to because
So tell me about that episode, about that Kingdom Kid.
Oh, my gosh. So you know, my moment of truth was a promise I made to God, you know, when I had my moment of clarity and decided, you know what, I'm just going to give it to him and see what happens, and he'll take me back. You know, I understand, I was the prodigal son, for real. Wow. I had everything, squandered it, wild living, and then came back broken, humbled. And I said, you know, you let me preach again, I'll go. I think he must have inspired this prayer, because I can't even imagine coming up with this, but I said, I'll go to the people that nobody else wants to preach to, and I'll preach to them.
Okay.
And I said, the hungry, the thirsty, the naked, the stranger, the, you know, the sick, the prisoner. And he brought this kid into my life, a mother, a distraught mother from the 90s. I had led a church in the 90s, and this woman reaches out to me on Facebook and says, Luis is in big trouble, can you help him? And I think of this little kid, Luis, and it's been 10 years, and I'm thinking he's still 13, you know, because you know how time stands still?
Yeah, of course, other people's
kids. And so I'm like, oh man, where's he at? What's up? But he's locked up, and he's in big, big trouble, because he had been jumped into a notorious street gang, which for his protection, I won't say, because, I mean, it was a gang-related murder with a death eligible case, meaning that they could seek the death penalty, and this is a federal case.
How old is Luis
at the time? He was 25 when I found him, so I lost him for
basically facing life in
waiting on a trial that would take 7 years to come. That's unheard of. He was moved around from jail to jail 7 years before they took the case to trial. And so I said, yeah, I'll go see him. And so I went to that jailhouse that night, and I was expecting this little boy to run out. And then this big, strong, scary-looking dude that was my friend came out, my little brother, you know. But he looked at me, and his eyes softened, and I saw that big smile. And he came, and we hugged, you know, and we spent about an hour that night, as much as they would let us, reconnecting. And he would get moved around for the next 3 years because of the security of his case. I mean, there were death threats on him. At one point, there was a death threat on me. It was because I was talking to him. I mean, it got crazy. We had a police car hanging out in our cul-de-sac, which is great when you're telling your wife, hey, baby, I'm sorry, but we're going to have a police presence because our gang is threatened. Yeah. But I was in love with him as my little brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so God took me into this scary world without any fear, because it was my guy. I didn't look at him as a gang leader that was looking at a murder charge. I looked at him as Luis, you know? And that is how God got me into this work, so that now, you know, I do it, and people say, man, aren't you afraid? And I'm like, no. I mean, I'm fascinated.
So he became a Christian.
Yeah, it was crazy. I studied with him for 2 years, which was great for me. Right. Because I had told God, I'm done with church, I'm done with the Bible, I don't want anymore. I was hurt so bad.
So then you start preaching again.
Yes. I mean, he got me back, you know.
Oh, so, gosh. Yeah. So tell me about the Power of Peace Project. Tell me some highlights, you know, because you shared some just incredible pictures and stories.
Yeah. It was, my life changed forever on January the 18th. 2011. Okay, I'd been going in to stay with Luis. Then I got invited into a prison in Georgia, which happened to be Georgia's most violent, dangerous maximum security prison in the middle of a gang war. Nobody told me that when they invited me.
Okay.
And so I just went in, and I went in with the same spirit that I had been working with Luis. I'm like, hey, this is going to be the same way, man. I'm going to get to go in, meet some new guys. And so that turned out to be a blessing, because I didn't go in afraid. I didn't go in with judgment. I went in hoping to see what I experienced with Luis.
Mm.
And so, but there was a gang war going on, and I started teaching this group of inmates in there that the warden asked me to work with. And I was at a conference in Philadelphia. I had an idea. This was December 2010. I said, man, Dr. King's birthday is coming up next month. What if we try a peace pledge in honor of Dr. King's birthday? You know, what could we lose?
Mm.
And so 12 men, white, black, brown, Christian, Muslim, Jew, Crip, blood, gangster disciple, 17 to 30 years old, most of them doing life sentences. This was, think about the 12.
Oh my
Jesus
gosh.
Is 12.
Mm-hmm.
That was my test group. Mm-hmm. And on January the 18th, we all signed a peace pledge.
How did you get them to do that?
3 or 4 weeks of arguing, challenging them, daring them, telling them that they couldn't do it, you know. And then I got them dreaming, saying, if we were going to do it, how would we do it? We just spent hours trying to figure out a way that we could do it. And then I dared them. And there was one guy in the room that took it. It was what he had been waiting for his whole life.
Really?
Death. I mean, he's doing life in prison, 2 years in, gang leader. He had been waiting for something great. And I called him to it. And his name's Andre. I'm forever indebted to Andre because he had the courage to go out on the yard and start telling people about this 40 Days of Peace. So what I had to do is quickly create something for them. So I came up with this thing that now is called 40 Days of Peace, which is developed into 40 Days to Freedom, 40 Days of Prayer, 40 Days of Power. I've done a series of short mm-hmm. books on it. But he went out and started telling everybody about it. I gave him two quotes a day from peacemakers like King, Gandhi, Mandela, the Dalai Lama, you mm-hmm. know, Cesar Chavez. I mean, great Mother Teresa, Maya Angelou. I just came up with all these. I gave him two quotes, an action challenge, told him to journal every day. If it doesn't work, write about it. If you think it's stupid, write about it. If it gets you hurt, heal up, write about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then every week we got together and we had discussion groups. How'd it go, man? Well, I tried it and da-da-da. And then we just started chopping it up and coming up. This little band of brothers came together and we became a team. Well, I told them to keep it on the down low because the warden had not given me permission to do it. Well, that worked about as well as Jesus, you know, healing the leper and saying, don't tell anybody. And he goes and tells tents and whatever. And so that's what Andre did. He went and started getting gang leaders and saying, hey, here's what we're doing. You want to be a part, and bringing them to me. And so now I'm the guy. All of a sudden they're bringing gang leaders to me saying, hey, this is Chang Gang, this is Kit. He's cool. He vouches for me. They want to be a part of it. Well, the warden finds out about it pretty quick because it's this buzz on this yard. And he comes to me and said, what have you done? I told you not to do that. And I said, I didn't mean to. I challenged the 12 to try to figure it out. And he said, well, you got to manage it. And I said, what's that look like? And he said, you got to get with these leaders. And so we developed this thing called the Peace Council. Now, keep in mind, this is a prison where we had 5 bodies in 6 weeks. Okay. Oh, I mean, there was killings every week.
Wow.
Okay. That's how bad this prison that ended up getting. So I'm sitting around with these guys in this small circle we call the Peace Council.
I thought the recording stopped, so we're back. So, okay, please continue.
So we had the Peace Council. Now, this is kind of comical, but it's a trip. I'm sitting around on Tuesdays with guys that are Crips, Bloods, Gangster Disciples, Muslims, Aryan Brotherhood. I mean, we got the heavies in this room. And, you know, I was in the ministry for years. I know how to handle a small group, right?
Right.
You get in a living room and, you know, Jim, what's up? Well, me and Marge aren't getting along too well. I said, all right, turn over to Ephesians 5. Husbands, love and wife. Yes, Bob. Oh, yeah, little Bobby's failing math and, you know, we don't know how to discipline him. Okay, turn over to Colossians 3. You know, don't exact. I knew how to handle that. Well, fast forward several years and I'm in a room and I'm like, okay, how are we doing this week, guys? What's up? And Day-Day, and he says, this is a real quote, he goes, yeah, this week in D1, there was a guy, he was wrapped up in a sheet, tied up and set on fire. What do you think we ought to do about that? And I'm sitting there like,
okay, that's slightly different.
I've got an inside voice and an outside voice. My inside voice is like, good Lord. Oh, you know, my outside voice is literally like, okay, well, how about if we take a vote? No burning people this week. So we actually were talking about real things, and these are rivals that are saying, hey, I'll stand down, but not if they don't stand down. I'll tell my guys to chill out, but not if he's going to keep doing the stuff he's doing. And peace came to this prison for this magical time, and this prison won Institution of the Year in the state of Georgia.
It did.
30 prisons. It went from worst to first.
That's incredible.
And I got the credit, and it wasn't mine. It was them, and it was other programs, but everybody started wanting me to come and speak about it. And they started treating me like I was an expert. And I was like, I don't know what happened. I'm trying to figure out how do we recreate that.
Right.
And that is what began the journey to what has become this crazy movement that's taken me to prisons all across the country, into Africa, Latin America, Eastern Europe, you know, getting ready to go to Tijuana and work with rival cartels in 2 weeks. So, I mean, it's blown up into something that could
never
have
imagined. That is incredible.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the program that you developed and what is it actually that you're doing in different places.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so if you're a warden or if you're a principal, because we did it in schools, or if it's a community center, you know, in a tough area, say Ferguson, Missouri, or whatever, is I'll tell the warden, okay, here's what I would like. I want 84 men. I want leaders, positive and negative. So that's your your model inmates and your gang leaders. I want the guys that are opinion leaders and influencers, and I want 84. So we're going to have 7 tables of 12. I love 12, right? Mm-hmm. I love 7. We do it for 40 days. 12, 7, mm-hmm. 40. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have them come in the first day, sit wherever they want, and I'm going to get them for a full day. And they come in sitting there, clicks. I mean, you've got Bloods and Crips, and, you know, and there's a real vibe in the room because they usually don't even let a lot of these groups get in the same room together a lot of times. Right. But they've invited us in because of the violence, and this program is effective at decreasing violence. So I get them for a full day, and through a series of, I'll speak, and then we'll break up and do an exercise. And I'll speak again, so it's teach for half an hour, 45 minutes, PowerPoint and everything. And then we'll watch a video, and we'll break up and do an exercise, and we'll have a little bit of sharing. And this goes on throughout the day, soften them up. My goal on day one is to get them to voluntarily come back for day two.
Right.
Okay. The warden will tell me, look, if nobody shows up tomorrow, don't take it personally. When I tell you 100% come back, I'm telling you 100% come back.
We don't
lose anybody. Okay.
That's so remarkable.
And usually after the first day, these guys are like, hey, can we bring anybody tomorrow? Our number goes up the second day. Mm-hmm. Blows the warden's mind. The second day, my goal is to spend the day, and that day is going to culminate with them being called to make a decision. And I've challenged them. We've laughed. We've cried. I've flat, straight out challenged their manhood. Like, you know, I mean, really, it's a dance, and it builds. But the second day, they don't get to sit where they want to sit.
Oh.
We have them at different tables, and they look across the table, and it's a guy that you're not cool with.
Right.
But not from your thing, you know, whatever. And now they have to do the second day. Now, if they want to get up and leave, they can leave, but they don't. Second day, my goal is to get them to sign the peace pledge at the end of the day that I'm going to challenge them to sign. So we give them a journal, and there's a wristband involved. Okay, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, in front of God and everybody, they take a stand, and again, 100% sign. This blows.
Really?
Yes. I mean, it's unbelievable what God does. But here's what I'm calling them to do. Here's a long answer to your question. It's a 40-day project with what I told you, daily journaling, action challenges, quotes. They meditate, memorize in small groups, and then we have this bang.
So they're all doing this individually and or collectively.
And then meeting on one night a week for 2 hours. Okay. They meet together, and we've got a video that we show them so that I can be there without being there.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So I launch it 2 days. But they sign the peace pledge, and here's what they're committing to on the first go-around is I'll seek first to understand my opponent.
Okay.
I'll find common ground with my enemy. Mm-hmm. I'll walk a mile in the other man's shoes before I judge him. I'll practice active listening and pause before responding. I'll practice deliberate communication and use my influence for peace. 6, when I'm wrong, I'll promptly admit it, quickly make amends. And 7, I'll treat my enemy with dignity and respect, even when we disagree. Okay, so those are the 7 things.
Okay.
We teach them those. They put on the wristband, which basically when they're walking through that prison now or down the school hall, it's a black wristband that says, I am the power of peace. People start looking at them and say, there goes one of those peacemakers. Mm-hmm. So they're held to a higher standard.
Uh-huh.
It was a risk because I thought, what if they get
targeted? Yeah.
Right.
But they didn't. They got this new level of respect, which was magic.
Really?
Because everybody respects a peacemaker for
of
the
course.
Most part.
Yeah, absolutely.
You hurt a peacemaker and somebody's going to get you. You know what I'm saying? And in a prison, there's this honor among thieves thing. So they stand up and I have them sign, look at one another, look to the person next to you. And then I want you to witness one another's signatures that you are committing to 40 days of trying to live that way. And that we hold them to a standard. When they graduate, when I come back, we have a celebration. We bring in free world food, which is a big deal. Fried chicken, mashed potatoes, cake. I mean, that's, shoot, they'll live nonviolently just for that.
Yeah.
You know, and if they can go 40 days without any violence and without any major, what they call write-ups or tickets, they get the right to graduate.
Okay.
And to get a certificate of achievement, which says that they've completed successfully the 40 days of peace. And that thing is taken before judges, parole boards, sent back to their families.
Oh,
I mean, it's one of the most...
So it sort of reflects in real life situation.
Maybe the first thing they've ever completed of substance.
Okay.
That leads them into phase 2, which digs a little deeper. 7 new steps, which is I'll be a peacemaker wherever I go. I will respect everyone. And that means everybody. Officers I don't like, rival gang members. 3, this is when they laughed at me in the beginning, when provoked, I will not retaliate. I will find a better way. They're like, wow, white boy's crazy. And then 4, when, now check this out, in a maximum security prison with gang members, when cursed, I will not curse back.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I will use deliberate language. I'll find a better way. 5, I will not lie, cheat, or steal for 40 days, because those are the things that create violence.
Right.
I say on day 41, lose your mind, but for 40 days, no lying, cheating, stealing. 6 is always when you're wrong, admit it, make amends. And then 7 is always treat people the way you want to be treated. So that's the basic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you created this program. You've executed it more than once, right?
Yes.
Give me a ballpark. What kind of? How many times? A number of times. In different places, different continents.
Different states, different. Right? Yeah.
So what are some of the, I mean, do you have some quantitative sort of benefits that came as a result? Like, how do you quantify the impact?
Yeah. Well, I think this is right, what I'm about to say, about the reason why this is hard to measure, but you can measure. There are metrics.
Yeah.
But if a warden has me come in, the power piece is coming in, I tell them, him or her, that we're going to create a more peaceful environment so that all the other programs you have in place can flourish. Because when violence goes up, programs, treatment, education are taken away, whether it's a school,
right,
a prison, where violence goes down. More programs, more freedom, more sports, more activities, more faith-based. So they want that because they've got 50 programs that are not effective because they keep locking everybody down when somebody gets stabbed up or whatever it is. And so the best I've gotten off the record, a warden in Michigan, well, we printed this, but it's hard to get numbers because the state won't release them. 18 months, 50% decrease in violence. Okay, stats. Yeah. Her prison, 3 to 5 times less incidents of violence than all the other same security prisons in Michigan, okay? And she said, it's the power piece, what did this? But here's the real quantitative answer is, we're doing juvenile corrections in Ohio. One of the biggest things they're trying to do in Ohio is to reduce what they call exclusion hours, okay? When a kid, and these are juvenile felons, when they get in trouble, they send them to the hole. It's the worst form of punishment because a human being is not supposed to be alone. We're built to be in community.
Didn't they banish that, or didn't Obama come up with some sort of law that you can't do solitary confinement anymore for juveniles?
No. It needs to be one, but they're probably pushing that. Very big part of corrections, unfortunately, is lock them down. Now, some people need to be locked down because they're violent to themselves, to other people, whatever. But most of the time, you need to treat it. Or you need to, a lot of people need treatment, education, programs. So anyway, they're going to war on that number in a good way. It's like, so for instance, we did the program in a juvenile facility in Ohio. May of 2014, the number of seclusion hours was 672. Okay, so that means you take all the boys in that prison, add up the numbers that they were in solitary by themselves, and it was 670 something. We did the program the next year in May. They set a record, not just for that prison, but for the state of Ohio. The number of seclusion hours were 64.
Wow, that's incredible.
But here's the problem. Not a problem, but the warden can't and shouldn't say it was because of the power of peace, because they got all these other programs that are being funded by the state that they have
to. They can't afford to.
So I said, warden, congratulations, that's incredible. You've got amazing programs. Do you think power of peace played a part in that? And he started laughing on the phone. He said, it's the whole reason, so we're getting that, but it's hard to get the
rest. That's fine. So you're moving the needle significantly is the point, I guess, and all over the place. But it's kind of like you, right, at this point. So I'm curious, what do you need to sort of scale it? Before we get to that, I'm curious about your arm. We talked a little bit about that, but show, just roll up your sleeves.
Show the audience.
Yeah, show the audience. No, but okay. Show Christian.
The first one was...
I'm telling the story. Like,
So
now we're looking at his arm. It's tatted up. logos. But what's cool about your tattoos is everything means something.
Oh, my gosh.
So tell us about that.
So the first, the 12, I wanted to do something significant for them, so I did this broken peace sign with a 40 on it.
Okay.
And this was in tribute to them, and I told my wife that would be the only one. But then I went to Michigan, and they did something significant. So I did the Mighty Men of Muskegon. That's where they're from. But then I went to Africa and did a prison down there, and so I put Amani, which is Swahili for peace. And
cool.
And then I went to Ukraine and did a prison there. So I did Russian for, you know, for peace. And then it paused because I did Honduras. And then I started doing these young juvenile prisons. So I did Circleville, Hayes, Cuyahoga, Indian River. And so now here's what I do.
So now you got a whole sleeve.
Basically. I got a sleeve. And I told, baby, just one arm. It's only going to be one arm. She's like, she doesn't believe me anymore. But now it's become a part of my strategy. As I go into a prisoner school and I say, you give me 40 days and do your best. Don't, no violence for 40 days. And when I come back, I'll have you on my arm.
Wow. And so I come back. That is commitment. That is commitment. Oh, my God.
And so here's
the... Skin in the game, man.
That is so intense.
So I went to Tijuana.
Literal skin in the game.
In the game.
So we started Tijuana a month ago, and so I promised those boys that when I came back, so I get to fulfill the promise when I go back in 2 weeks to show them that you're on my arm forever.
Okay, I gotta take a picture of this. Okay.
Yeah. No, this is
awesome. This is awesome, right? Okay. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. So, while we're doing that, so basically, I mean, you've put your literal skin in the game, right? And so these guys are motivated. What's their reaction been to that?
they think I'm crazy. I mean, they really do.
Did you get some camaraderie with them on this thing?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, you want to hear a story?
Yeah, man, come on.
Okay, so... Yeah, it's hard to tell which story do I tell. I was telling a brother downstairs that it's hard to figure out which ones do I tell. I only had 20 minutes today, and I had to pick some from the last month. But it's rare to have somebody that'll die for you, okay? But it happens. We say it in our churches, I die for you, bro, but we don't know.
Right,
you die for your wife. You die for your kids. You die for your mom. I mean, we know that. But would you die for a brother? Maybe. I don't know. We'll never know. These guys behind the razor wire, they will flat die for you. I mean that. I've got guys that love me so much because of this thing that has become their own that they're like, man, I'll die for you. But check this out. My son, my stepson, my wife that has our oldest, he's a soldier. 4 tours, 2 in Iraq, 2 in Afghanistan, sniper. He's out now, has a little boy. We got a grandson through him. On one of his tours, he came home from a leave, and he was at a party, and there was a guy there, and he was just geeked up, and there was a fight, and Justin was cut up real bad. Justin was defending the honor of a girl. The guy came back with a knife, cut him up real bad, cut his throat, and he would have bled out, but Justin knew how to. He'd been combat trained. Mm-hmm. He got to the hospital, didn't wait on the ambulance. So anyway, he's in surgery 3 hours. It's miraculous that he didn't die. So I go back to the prison that next week, and I'm heavy, man. You know, because this, you know, this is my own blood. Mm-hmm. And so I, like always, man, I can share with those guys things I can't share in churches. I'm more open in prisons because there's no judgment there. And they're loyal, man. And so I start telling them about how somebody had tried to kill my son. There was a real heaviness because a lot of them were in there for doing that, but they loved me. And so there was a confliction, and they were like, and they got the guy, and they round him up, and he was, you know, wherever he was. He hadn't been sent to state prison yet. And so I'm telling them, and I cry, man. I'm telling them, you know, and it's a powerful moment. And all of a sudden, a hand goes up in the back. And I said, yeah, well, what's up, bro? And he goes, what's his name?
Oh, my gosh.
I said, what? And he said, his name. What's his name? And I said, I mean, I can't tell you his name. And then another brother is like, tell us his name. And then all of them start yelling, what's his name, man? And then this brother, it was a beautiful little thing. He goes, we won't kill him. We'll just touch him.
He said, just touch him.
I mean, now this is real here. Because all of us have light in us. All of us have a little darkness in there. Yeah. These guys have light in them. I got darkness in me. I was so tempted. All I had to do was say Michael, and they would have said, got you. Because you can get to anybody. They can get to anybody. And they don't. What they won't just die for you. They'll kill for you. Mm.
That's powerful.
That's love.
That's love, man. So you've gotten there. You've put skin in the game. You got response. Now, what do you need? What do you need to take this to the next level? We talked a little bit about before. Like,
someone listening out there goes, how can I get involved? Yeah, how can I support it? Whatever.
Yeah. It's...
Talk about your plan a little bit.
We're going through a period of discovery, which is great. It's becoming a great story. There's a buzz around it. and I am going to, I'm glad you asked the question. In 2 weeks, I'll be back in San Diego and crossing the border into Tijuana. We're doing two prisons in Tijuana, one called La Mesa, one called El Hongo. One's in Tijuana and one's down near Mexicali. These are real deal prisons, right? And one of them, this is what blows my mind, because I promised God, I said, I'll go wherever I'm invited, invite me. And I didn't qualify it. Maybe I should have, but I didn't.
That's
okay, we're being invited into this prison because there's rival cartels that are fighting for control of this prison, and they believe the Power Peace Project is a solution. So I'm like, my gosh. So this thing is growing, and people think that I'm this big organization. You know, I mean, people will call, leave a message, and say, yeah, this is so-and-so from, you know, L.A., please, we'd like to get in touch with Mr. Cummings, can you please? They don't know that they got my cell phone.
Right, of course.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I say we all the time, like, we're going to Tijuana. And people are like, who's we? And I say, you know, me and a frog in my pocket. And so I've just gotten brick and mortar, okay, Power Peace Project, Atlanta, right. Georgia. We have office, I have a suite, you know, we have office space, which is huge. And then as of last week, I made my first hire, and I have a manager and an executive director, and she is dynamite. And so those are huge leaps of faith for me, because it's legitimizing. It's been me,
of course, yeah,
a microphone, a dream, a frequent flyer miles, and a debit card flying around trying to do this. And the fact that we've been able to affect, we have thousands of inmates wearing those wristbands. We have thousands of kids around the country wearing those wristbands. We even have some overseas. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have them wear in Spanish, I am the power. Well, it doesn't translate, so it's going to say, peace is my power. Mm-hmm. And we've done all that, we and my frog, with smoke and mirrors. I go and I speak, I ask for donations, I sell books, I have a few beautiful angel investors, which they've helped me through with donations. But what I need is people that are much smarter than I am at promotion and marketing to help the best little secret in the world be a,
wow.
You know. So you've never really put anything out that says, you know, any kind of campaign to say we need your support and kind of build the story and communicate the story in a place that people have a place to fund.
Yeah, I mean, I have some private donors, which have been angels.
Right, we'll talk
I've
about
done
this
a couple more. Little GoFundMe and Indiegogo. We're having a fundraiser in Atlanta next week, which is a show I'm putting on that, you know, we'll raise. You know, we raised 10 grand here, you know, 5 grand here, 15 here. So we've managed to do it, but it's time to now go to the next level.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest in this Tijuana-San Diego connection on the Mexican side. The government there's some deep pockets down there that really, really want to build a bridge. This is cool. Last week, the DEA discovered the biggest tunnel.
Tunnel, yeah. 7 tons of
contraband.
Yeah.
This tunnel's the biggest tunnel they found that the cartels are bringing the drugs in, and it's in Tijuana.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the process of building a bridge between the youth in San Diego and a youth in Tijuana, and to show that children will get along.
Mm.
And
rest
of the world needs to see how...
That's
so we're blocking tunnels, and I think that this timing was not coincidental.
Bridges.
We're building bridges, and I'm like, cool. Oh my, Oprah.
Come on, Oprah.
Call me.
Call. This is
good stuff. So,
right?
Yeah.
So we had a little conversation earlier about scaling this. What's it take to scale it? Besides funding, we'll talk a little about that. Mm-hmm. What's it take in terms of, I mean, there are a lot of people in the U.S. that are involved in prisons, and a lot of church people are involved in prisons. Is there a place for them to plug into you? Is that useful to you? Like, what is it useful to them? What are your thoughts there in terms of a strategy to scale this opportunity?
I think the beauty of it is whether it's a church, a school, a prison, a community, it really is this beautiful medicine that brings people together. And I think God did it in a way where if you got Crips and Bloods, and we've got an Aryan Brotherhood, former Aryan Brotherhood is the neo-Nazis in the prison.
Yeah.
Right now I've got a guy up in Ohio that is mentoring a young black inmate. And he is a skinhead and a young black man. That's like biblical miracle stuff in this world, right?
Yeah.
And so we've got this thing that is it's the medicine, but it's built on universal laws and principles that always work wherever they're practiced, period. There's no qualifying. God set some things in motion that always work, always. So to the prison ministry out there in Austin, Texas, they're looking for volunteers because they're passionate about their thing. Mm. this is a hot program that once you get it in a prison, we need all the volunteers we can get. So now all of a sudden, great, we'll partner with you and we'll take your 10, we'll multiply it into 40. So what have we done? We've helped them and I've gotten great support, right?
Right.
Same with schools and prisons or whatever. But
what
would
the volunteers do? What would be like a normal pattern for a volunteer?
And this is a very interesting subject right here. Okay, because what happened is it was built with the volunteers from the free world, facilitated the small groups in the 40-day projects. Mm-hmm. And I'd have at least two, sometimes three, in that group of 12. And that was cool because inmates, they love free world volunteers. It's their connection to the outside and everything. But then all of a sudden we had this one summer where a warden said, hey, whoever wants to sign up, we're going to have the next 40 days of peace, blah, blah, blah. And out of 1,200 men in the prison, 600 signed up. Hmm. Which they'd never seen. That doesn't happen in prison. So this is the hottest program. And I didn't have volunteers, man. I'm like, I went back to the warden. I said, I can't do 600 and we don't have volunteers. And if we cancel it, there's going to be problems. I mean, these guys love this program. So I asked her, I said, can I train the inmates to facilitate their own groups? Now, this was a huge risk because you don't put one inmate over another in prison. Mm-hmm. And so she said, her name's Warden Mary Burgess. She's a mentor and a beautiful, like a mother to me. I mean, in the prison system, she's beautiful. And she's like a mother. But she said, I trust you. If they fire me, hire me. Mm. And I was like,
wow.
She was kind of kidding.
That's intense, man.
Wow,
but
that's
she trusted
that's
me
intense.
That much. And so I did a train the trainer with the men in blue. Do you know that and I got a little bit of pushback mm-hmm. from the churches in the community. They said, it ain't going to work as well without us. And one even said, the magic of the program is the volunteers. Another one, and I quote, we could teach Dr. Seuss and this would work because of the volunteers. And I went, well, good luck with that. And we went ahead and launched this one. It put the program on steroids. I mean, once we empowered the inmates, which I believe is the answer to the correctional problem we have with this 2.4 million people we got locked up. Trust them and they're trustworthy.
Yeah.
I mean, treat them like they're a man and they'll act like a man. Treat them like they're an animal, they will bite you. I mean, so it's the program really developed a new stage. The next phase is we want to develop, and Ohio's going to let me do this, a train the trainer for officers and staff. Now, that's really, really radical.
Yeah, it is, right.
Because I have to go into the warden and say, look, I promise you I'm not going to try to teach your staff. That's none of my business. But I am going to try to help them understand what the inmates are trying to do and encourage good behavior when they see it. You know, that's all I'm asking. And so to scale it is to train the trainer as the next piece. And then, because I can't be everywhere, the videos let me be remote, you know, but I've got to be able to replicate it. It's hard to find. That's been the biggest thing. I need people that want to get involved because I'm looking for people that have the gifts and the skill set or are teachable and have... This is a hard thing to teach somebody how to do.
Yeah. Well, I know some people that have done some work in Rikers Island, other places that we've been a part of in the past and would love and don't have sort of the thinking, the background, the creative program.
Yeah.
So I think we'll talk about this, maybe do a follow-up.
Yeah.
But I love it. It's been great to kind of have you here. I know you got a role, so... But I love the skin in the game, right?
That's exciting.
The impact is incredible.
Gosh. Incredible.
Your spirit, like, just, kind of like, let's just go for it, right? And you want to, I guess we're kind of winding up. You have anything else you want to talk about?
I do. One thing.
Right,
Go for it.
Okay, the wristband turned out to be a commodity. All right, guys want the wristband. Mm. So you got guys with 2, 3, 4 because they've been through phase at 5 wristbands and now they get more cred on the yard.
Nice.
And so, but I'll finish with this. We had this big launch, an amazing program. We were having the graduation celebration. This guy came up and he's an enforcer. He's doing a life sentence. He's a warrior, man, and he's a soldier. And he comes up and he said, I need to talk to you. And he pulls me aside. He's a big man. He's been there a long time. Scars to show it. And he said, I want you to know that this wristband, and he takes his wristband, he said, this saved a life. And I said, well, yeah, I know. I think lives are being saved. He goes, no, you don't understand. It saved a life. There's a brother in this gym breathing right now that shouldn't be. And I said, well, what happened? And this big old strong man, his lips started quivering a little bit, and he teared up. Hmm. And he said, an order had been given, and I was sent to do the deal, because that's what I do. And he was sent to kill a guy because the guy was causing trouble for the peace movement.
Okay.
Which is, that's how much. Interesting. Well, guys, maybe we ought not kill somebody during the peace. I mean, I was like, this is such a fascinating ride. But anyway, he said, I walked all the way across the yard, was about to go into the building, and he looked down, he said, and then I saw that wristband. And I thought, I can't dishonor the brotherhood. I made a commitment. So he walked all the way back across the yard. And while he was going back, he thought, I'm going to take the wristband off, I'm going to put it on my bunk, and I'm going to go kill him. And he said, but it gave me time to think. And by the time I got back to my rack, I decided that I wasn't going to do it. And he went, and he got the decision overturned. And so these wristbands and the certificates are so precious to these guys. It's all they've got. And it gives them something to feel proud of. And you guys heard me talk about these guys today as if they're heroes, because they are to me. And they've never had anybody do that for them. And they know that I'm out traveling the world telling their story, and that emboldens them. And I make them role models for kids. So now in towns where I go, the hated, feared, forgotten men in that town become role models to the kids in the schools that I do in that town. And then the kids become the big why for the... They feed off each other. The kids are following the inmates that are doing good. The inmates don't want to let the kids down. So now we've built a bridge between two dysfunctional institutions. I mean, I could go
that's
on.
That's incredible. You've basically shown them dignity and respect.
What you did.
And then they acted. I mean, they fall in line with it. Like all human beings.
All human beings in every everywhere. We're all built the same.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out in 2 weeks if it works with cartel members. I'll get back to you later.
I'm very interested in that.
We need to take some videos. We need to tell this story. It'd be great to have some video footage and begin. We'll talk about this some more, about how to tell this story a little bit further. But anybody that's listening and wants to be involved, why don't you give them some contact information? Yep. How can they reach you?
It's powerofpeaceproject.com. Google Power Peace. Find me at powerofpeace88 on Twitter. Kit Cummings on Facebook, or Power Peace Project on Facebook, you know.
Dude, I'm psyched to have met you and hang out with you a little bit. And psyched to, Christian and I, love what you're doing, right? So
yeah,
we're all about supporting you in this.
Thanks for letting me talk so much, man.
It was fantastic.
We could go for a couple hours, I'm sure. So
I love it. Thank you guys for caring and inviting me into your, and who are you, I'm sure you have a big following. Thank you for listening. And yeah, pray for your boy. I don't want it to be the Kit Show. I want an army of people that are going to change the world through this thing.
Start a movement.
There you go. Already got one.
It's already there. It's already there.
All right, man. I got some extra skin if you need some. If you run out of some,
I'll
follow you up.
Are you going to call my wife and get me out of trouble?
That's good, man.
All right.
Be now.